Hello and welcome to Rewatchable episode number 311. Today we're discussing Agent Carter season 2 episode 5, Atomic Job. My name is Danielle and I'm going to be your host for today. And I am joined by some pretty lovely ladies. We have superfan Kristen and newbies Brittany and Kendra.
Hello.
Hi. Hey.
So if you would like to get in contact with us, and hopefully you do, you can do that through multiple avenues. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can Tumblr us. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Or if you want to talk directly to us and sort of get comments back in real time, depending on how Facebook feels that day, you can come find our Facebook group. We are Rewatchables Rewinders. We're literally the only thing on Facebook called that, so you should be able to find us pretty easily. Again, that's Rewatchables Rewinders. But please save that for after the show or maybe while you're listening. But for right now, to get to used to our voices, we're going to do our fun fact section that we like leading off every episode with. Kristen, would you like to start?
Sure, only because I just got home from seeing Detective Pikachu, and it's really cute and full of Pokemon, and yeah, I have I was never crazy obsessed with Pokemon because it was a little bit right before my time, but my brothers were, so we watched it every morning before school during their childhood. So I know all the first generation Pokemon, and then after that, it's kind of a giant question mark. But I could name about half the Pokemon I saw in that movie, so there's a lot, but it's
that's a win
and lots of fun, and Ryan Reynolds is great, so you know, what more could you ask for?
It looks like a really good time. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, it's fun.
And Kendra, what is your fun fact for the week?
Well, I mentioned last week that my life has currently been stolen by rehearsals for Little Shop of Horrors. And since it wasn't taking enough of my time already, I decided tonight to make little cupcakes for the show. If you're not familiar with it, there's a man-eating plant involved. So the cupcakes are going to have little Venus flytrap kind of plants on them.
Cute. And
yeah, since it's it eats people, I was I'll make them red velvet cupcakes because it's blood and scary. But I've never made red velvet cupcakes before, and I've now proceeded to just eat half the batter because it's so delicious. And that's as far as I've gotten.
Sounds dangerous.
Yeah.
Those look so cute. Please take pictures. I'd love to
Will
see
too.
That. Yes. And Brittany, your fun fact for the week.
My fun fact is that I had a very, very, very hellish week at work, but it made my coming home time a little bit more enjoyable because I was just so exhausted at the end of each workday. So I watched a movie for fun, and I actually enjoyed coming home and watching shows that I missed during the week. So I just really appreciated entertainment this weekend. And I watched Wine Country last night, the new Amy Poehler movie on Netflix. Highly recommend. If you're looking for something though that's you see Amy Poehler and you're oh, I'm going into this because I love Amy Poehler and Amy Poehler only, forget it, because Amy Poehler is kind of annoying in the movie, but
no.
The supporting cast is so phenomenal that it doesn't even matter. But I had the best time watching it with a big glass of wine on Friday night after this work week. And it was just fantastic. And then I went to bed at 9:15. Everything was wonderful.
Oh, yes.
Oh, so good, guys. And I really recommend Wine Country. I loved it. I thought it was just the perfect, no stakes movie. I had no expectations going into it, and it was just so good. Also, Tuca and Birdie is very good on Netflix. Tiffany Haddish and Ali Wong do the voices of two birds who are best friends and completely opposite people, and they're wonderful. So good.
So, I saw that you were watching it and that you had liked it. And so that made me kind of want to watch it.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious. It's right up my alley of humor, which is subtle, mumbled under your breath lines that are just laugh out loud funny. which is like, there's like a whole bunch of stuff going on, like in a moment, like at a dinner or something. And like, like someone just says something and none of the others catch it. And it's just under the breath and it is hilarious. And I just, that's my favorite type of humor. So it's, I recommend it.
Awesome. It's going on my list. And like Kendra, my fun fact for the week is also food related. Tonight I made shawarma, chicken shawarma, and I was really proud of myself. I had been craving it since mainlining all of the Marvel movies before Endgame and just never actually bought the stuff for it. But I did it tonight and it was super easy and it was delicious. So much so that like my stomach hurts because I overate. But it was really worth it. And I felt like an Avenger afterwards or during.
Oh, well, of course.
You know, I like sat hunched over, my hand covering my beard. I don't know. I don't have a beard. I just want to put that out there. But yeah, so shawarma, very good. And I actually was eating shawarma while watching this episode, which also was very heartwarming. And I want to jump into talking about this episode because I know I say this all the time and I apologize if I sound like a broken record, but I forgot how much I loved this episode and I cannot wait to talk about it with you guys. So first, Ariana's recap, and that goes, in this episode, Peggy decides to go grave robbing, but when Whitney Frost beats her to the corpse, she's forced to go steal some bombs instead. Meanwhile, Sousa proposes to a girl who's too good for him. It's pretty accurate, I would say. So Zero Matter is a huge, huge player in this now. Last week, we saw exactly what Whitney Frost kind of is able to do with it. And now she just wants more. But we start off this episode actually seeing how Wilkes reacts with the Zero Matter around, or rather how the Zero Matter reacts around Wilkes. And the episode opens with Wilkes being creepy and like standing over Peggy's bed. I don't know if that bothered anyone else, but every time I see it, I just want to punch his intangible face. Because it's so weird.
I don't care if you can't be like hurt. You don't sneak up on like a spy or an agent. Like you don't do it.
Right.
Like you just don't do that sort of thing.
You use your powers to walk through walls responsibly. Even Vision was able to learn a lesson about walking through walls and how rude it is.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't know. I just, ugh. So that already made me like not happy about this scene just because he just gives me reasons not to like him and it makes me sad. But he goes down into the lab, brings Peggy with him, and basically the Zero Matter is like super attracted to him. So much so that it kind of phases out of the glass container that it's in and goes into his intangible body, making him tangible and kind of making his eyes go dark and everything. Which is a little disconcerting. Was anybody... immediate reaction to this, did you think that he was going to stay tangible, like go super evil? How did this kind of play out for you?
As soon as I saw the black eyes, I thought he was probably going to become kind of a villain. I didn't think much of him being tangible, but I definitely assumed that he was going to go a darker route, since basically what was making up his body was this like dark substance.
Yeah, I agree. I think the dark eyes really did one over for me. And especially as I was watching it, I think I said aloud, Peggy, why are we trusting him? Because his eyes just went dark. And that's the number one sign that someone is turning evil or something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt so like, they felt like there was so much like trust still in that scene. And I was like, why wouldn't you react to this? Yeah. The tangibility thing though, I'm kind of glad it was fleeting. Because I kind of like that they can't, I'm a big fan of like, you know, distance makes the heart grow fonder type of relationships, like British dramas where like, you know, it's barely a kiss at the end of a 20-hour saga that you just watched.
Right. It's furtive glances. And all
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I was a fan of like him not being completely tangible, but I did think that that was an interesting twist of how like something was sparked in the dark matter to make him either come out of it a little bit or disconnect him or make it stronger. Like, I don't know what it did, if it weakened it or if it made it stronger. Like, I don't know exactly the science there, but
Don't question the science, Brittany.
Exactly. The dark eyes, though, clear indicator that something is wrong.
Well, and also he starts hallucinating a little bit, or not hallucinating, perhaps, but like seeing things later in the episode, which is also disconcerting.
Yeah, and he was also like last episode, you know, looking in the chalkboard and, you know, starting to like space out a bit.
Oh, sorry. Yes, that was last episode. My bad. I watched them both together, so.
That's okay. But yeah, so that's where the chalk zone reference comes from. Danielle doesn't know what chalk zone is. And it makes me feel like I was the only person who grew up with Nickelodeon in the 90s, but that's okay.
I did too. That's the thing. I don't know what that was, but maybe.
Chalk zone is so good. It's so good.
I really need to listen to last week's episode. I've had similar weeks probably to what you've had, and so I haven't had a time to watch or listen, but yes, I will go back and listen to the episode and the discussion of chalk zone.
Yeah, so Rudy, basically Rudy has magic chalk and he can draw a circle on a chalkboard and go into chalk zone. So when this chalkboard started like melding, I was like, oh my god, they're opening the portal to chalk zone, which is such a fun time for everyone. But yeah, anyway, so he's like, clearly something's happening where he's either like losing it or it's having an effect on the whatever is left of his human side. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward, because let's jump to the end of the episode. But
I was just going to say, let's jump to the end of the episode. And like, did him absorbing that zero matter here kind of make that his disappearance at the end actually happen faster, or would he have disappeared sooner? Like, how does his disappearance play with all this?
Well, also, it's only been like a day. So if you've listened to this podcast at all, I'm very big on timelines, and like, we've only been here a day.
Yep.
So it really hasn't been that long since the beginning of this episode to the end of this episode. So since he absorbed the dark matter, I don't really know how long it's been, but it's not been that long. A lot of stuff happens in a very short amount of time. And for him to slowly disappear, I think it had something to do with the actual physical touch of that tissue. Because like, then he was like somehow connected to be like, I know where the body is. Like, it was a very weird sort of like, is there this other plane where all of this stuff is existing on, which I think we've kind of, as newbies at least, hinted at. Like, mm-hmm. are all of those trucks and those men from the first experiment just sitting somewhere in limbo? And are these other people also there? Or is it like something else is happening? So he's sort of like, when he starts to like phase out, I feel like the tissue, or maybe because Whitney Frost is getting stronger, something's pulling him in. I'm not entirely sure though, but that was when he disappeared. I was like, oh, something clearly happened in that moment that accelerated this. And also, we don't see him much, which I was kind of, that's another thing, but we'll talk about it when we get to the mission. Like, why didn't he go? He could literally walk through walls and be like, there's someone on the other side. Like, he's the perfect
fair person point
to infiltrate this whole thing. And I was so mad about it. I was like, Wilkes could walk through the elevator and tell you that like Whitney's already here. Like, he's the perfect recon man in this moment. But it's fine, they left him at home and took the D team. Well, a B and D team member, I should say. How dare I?
But we'll get to that for sure. So what you're saying is, it kind of seems like everything that's impacted by the zero matter is kind of connected in a way.
Yeah, because
that's how it feels. So do you?
Yeah, especially because as soon as he like had contact with that tissue, he was like, "Oh, I know where the body is."
Yeah. So do we think that Wilkes and Whitney are connected somehow too?
Yeah. Now that you say that, Brittany, I could kind of see there being like a give and take with Wilkes and Whitney. Like, as Whitney gets stronger, there's like less for Wilkes to draw from, and that maybe at some point one of them's going to end up having to overtake the other. Mm-hmm. See that happening.
Interesting. something to keep an eye out for.
Or Howard's like spray just isn't working anymore. Like, I mean, I don't know if they have to, like, if Jarvis like puts Peggy to bed and then he's like, oh, 10:30, must go spray Wilkes now again. Like, I don't know if there's like a, you know, like a schedule or what's going on, but
they just have like a shower set up for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really surprised at the end when they weren't just like, oh, someone grabbed the spray. Like, that would have been my first idea, but.
Do they all just have, like, emergency bottles, like, with, you know, like, everybody has a bottle, like, okay, if he starts to disappear, spray him down, like, you know, how often does this happen? That's more or less the question.
Yeah, he seemed, like, genuinely worried in that moment, so I feel like he might have felt something else was happening, which is why I didn't think about the spray thing until right now. Because when I was watching it, I was like, uh-oh, something's clearly wrong.
Yeah, something's wrong. They were having a moment. They need to not have moments. But that's just me. So let's jump back to the beginning of the episode, because we really got ahead of ourselves, and talk about another sort of couple, or like another kind of plot line going on, and that is Sousa and Violet. So a while ago, we know that Sousa wanted to take Violet to dinner and propose to her that way. And that obviously did not happen, because I think that was the same night that Peggy and Wilkes were out and he had to like not do that date, I think. So basically Sousa breaks into Violet's house, as one does, but makes her dinner, which I guess is nice, but then falls asleep on her couch because she had to work a double shift because she's an adult and a professional. And he loses the ring in the couch. So Ariana in the doc was kind of mad that he wouldn't just wait until he finds the ring to propose to Violet. But I don't know. It seems to me that like it would have been worse if she would have found it and like not known what it was. So all this to say, did this proposal scene make everyone swoon? Do we feel Sousa and Violet and their relationship? Do they seem compatible, or is everybody kind of pulling for Sousa and Peggy at this point? I'm curious to know your thoughts.
I'm definitely team Sousa and Violet, and I liked the proposal. I agree, like, if he had just waited for her to find the ring, like, it's not like he's ever there except for right now when she's not there. Like, he never would have had another chance to look for it. Mm-hmm. So he kind of had to at that point. And I liked that he said that she was mean only because all we've seen of her so far is like her being very, very sweet, and he's proven to like Peggy before, which is, that's not her archetype at all. So that kind of lended a little bit to his relationship with Violet, that she kind of has that side to her as well. So I'm really into them, and I don't.
It's that no nonsense nurse said.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, that, you know, everybody knows what you're talking about, because nurses can like bring it out when they need to, like,
for sure.
Yeah.
They can shut it down. Yeah. When they need to work.
Yeah. I like Violet a lot. I really think that Sousa and Violet are very cute together. I liked the proposal, but I was also concerned as to like why he is still carrying the ring around. Like, maybe he went and, like, picked it up and, you know, he just likes to have it as a reminder, like, oh, can't get too close. Like it's sort of like something that he, like, it's like a physical grounding of his feelings against Peggy. Like, oh, I have this ring. Like, this is where my priority should be, is with Violet. I love this girl. This is, like, where my heart is. And for him to lose it and then just, you know, sort of realize, okay, it's now or never, when he was doubled down on, you know, proposing in that moment before Peggy came back and really like swept him up in this particular mission. I think it was good for them. I was a little not thrilled with like the, you know what, I'm just going to tell you now, like it would have been kind of cute for her to like find the ring and he'll be like, you'll know it. Cause that line, like, you'll know it when you see it, was just very cute and very Sousa-y. Like, it felt very in character for him.
And then he ruined it.
Yeah, and then he ruined it. He, like, got in his own way, which is, like, so annoying to watch. But I'm glad that they are, well, I mean, we know what happens at the end, but in that moment in particular, I was like, oh, this is cute, because she's so happy and just, like, yes, she was startled and she came home, but then she realized, like, oh, he, like, was exhausted and he still made me food and like then fell asleep. Like, you know, it's like they're just not on the same page right now, but they kind of want to be. And this moment was just very, it was very cute. And I wish them the best.
And I mean, smart girl has a baseball bat near the door.
Yeah.
And like, goes to pick it up immediately. She looked fierce.
Oh yeah. She knows what, she's a single lady living by herself with a man who will not pop the question. She needs to be prepared for anything.
I mean, good point. Very good point. But yeah, no, I like Violet as well. I think she's, they're doing something that they didn't do in the first season, I think, with all of these female characters. They're giving like different shades of, I guess, the woman experience. Like you have Peggy, obviously, but then you have Anna Jarvis and you have Rose and you have Violet, and they're all very different, but they're all very obviously capable and strong in their own way. And I think that Violet is a good match for Sousa. But I also think that like it's this episode when Sousa is proposing to Violet and then you see him with Peggy at the end. This is the episode I think that, and we'll get to that, I guess, but this is the episode that makes me finally see Sousa and Peggy as viable, I guess. And it sucks that it's because we get Sousa and Violet at the beginning here.
See, when I first watched the show, the first time I watched it, I was a huge Peggy Sousa shipper, like huge. Like I loved them together. I thought that they were like, you know, two sides of the same coin and it was all this cute. And watching it again, like I kind of see people's criticism of him. Like it's definitely shading how I see his character and it definitely has changed my mind a little bit. But I still had the same gut reaction watching him and Violet. Like, they're so adorable, but I'm sitting there going, like, but it's just not right. Like, they're really sweet together. And, you know, like, if in a perfect world where Peggy never makes it to LA, like, they would have been fine, and it would have been a lovely life, and they would have lived together, and it would have been beautiful. But it just, there's something about, you know, Peggy being in his life that just changes things, and yeah, like, so that it gets me too, like in this episode, like I like seeing them together, but then you get this moment with him and Peggy later and you're like, oh yeah.
I think it's interesting. You said that it would be fine. And that makes me think that like is in the previous episode, we get the flashback to who Peggy was before she joined the SOE and before she became Agent Carter. And she was talking about her marriage. And I believe they were talking about how like she like wanted like a fine life, but there would be nothing more than that. Is Sousa and Violet, would that be just fine, as you were saying? Like, or are we seeing it like Sousa is to Violet as Peggy is to, and I forgot her fiance's name, where they would both be fine and it would be sweet, but they both like kind of need something else.
It's Fred. How dare you?
Fred.
I'm sorry. He is the best and the worst.
Yes. Agreed on both fronts.
We talked a lot about Fred last week and how horrible he is. He's the Riley Whitebread of this series.
Yes.
Mr. Fred.
I get it. I get it. I usually do my listening homework, and I apologize that I haven't before this episode.
It's okay. We turned it into a Jack Thompson podcast.
Yeah, so we really did. Yeah, we were hoping you would.
Peggy Who? We have a lot to talk about the man who was not on screen at all for these 40 minutes. So, yeah, when we get to the Jack Thompson part of the podcast, then we'll have a lot more to say.
Sure.
But I think that, like, I agree. I feel like if Sousa, like, and Violet were to have this relationship where there's not this realization at the end on Violet's part, it would have just been Sousa looking outward. I feel like it would have been not satisfying for either party, and it would have become a very resentful relationship, and sort of like, you know, one eye on what you have at home and one eye on the what if of life. Mm-hmm. Which is just not good for anyone. Like, if there's an opportunity that is more exciting, or you're just like not in it with your whole heart, then of course it's not going to be the love story of the century, and no one wants fine, especially if your job for on Seuss's end and Peggy's end, like the career is very exciting and very fulfilling and rewarding. And, you know, you're helping some, you're working towards a cause that's bigger than yourself. And then, like, you know, and so is Violet. She's helping people. She's saving lives. Like, as we see in this episode, she is perhaps the most heroic in this episode, like just getting into action and taking care of things and getting done what needs to be done and using her skills. So it's like they both have fulfilling careers, but what, like, do they settle in their home life because of that?
Mm-hmm. And like, we see how that worked out with Dooley.
Exactly. Yeah, that's who I was saying. I wanted to bring that up. I couldn't think of his name. So I was like, you know, that guy.
Yeah, no, I gotcha.
But yeah, Dooley, we see that he's like, you know, he's sleeping on his office couch by the end of his marriage. And he, when he goes back under the like spell, you know, it's sort of like, I miss the time I spent here. And it's because he didn't, like, he had everything at home too, but it just wasn't equally balanced. Sad. I miss Dooley.
Yeah, I do too. I miss the gang. But there's a new gang in town that I want to get to in a second. But before they go on their mission, Peggy and Jarvis go on a mission of their own at the beginning of the episode to try to steal a dead girl's body. I mean, as one does. But they're so adorable together, Peggy and Jarvis, that I could see them do all of these random missions and just watch a whole show of it. Like them crawling around in the air duct and agreed. Jarvis is afraid of spiders and...
Jarvis is pretty much me anytime anybody takes me like into a dark, you know, anything where a spider could live. I'm the one looking at the ceiling like nothing's falling on my head, right? Like, yeah.
How so often are people taking you into caves?
Well, like, not when we come home from, like, anywhere, and I park my car in our garage, when you're walking up to our door, there's an overhang, and there used to be a spider who lived in the overhang. So every day when I walk in the back door at night, I have to, like, unlock the door and then, like, kind of run through and close it behind me because... there was a spider and I don't like them. So yes, I'm very much Jarvis in that scene.
Oh,
spiders are well, awful.
At least Jarvis had something else to be scared about because they finally found out exactly what Whitney can do. And I feel like that is slightly more terrifying than a spider. Maybe.
True story.
Yeah. But I remember watching this and having it be kind of a relief that they get to find out what Whitney can do so soon after it was kind of like made a mystery. I like that that's not kind of hanging over their heads and something that the audience knows for a while longer than Peggy. Because I feel like it's been quite a while already, but I'm glad that they found out that Whitney can do these things pretty much soon after Whitney did. I don't know if anybody felt the same way about that.
I am a huge fan of burning through story and getting things out in the open up front. So yes, I agree. We're at episode 5. So like, we're not completely at the start of the season, but it's earlier than I thought it would be, which is good, especially because like, we still have some unresolved stuff looming from last season. So like, you don't want everything bottlenecked, like, you know, at the end being like, oh, we still have to reveal this, but should we check in with what's going on in New York? And like, is that playing into something bigger here? And like, you know, there's a lot of things happening. And so, yeah, I'm glad that we know early on.
Makes it easier, for sure. Ariana didn't put it in the doc, but I wanted to talk about the fact that I mean, Whitney is basically controlling everything at this point. She has the power that she needs in order to, I guess, motivate herself to take more power or feel like she deserves more power. And so they go to the mafia to get some help. And the head of the mafia is Ken Marino, who rewatchable fans will know best as Vinnie Van Lo, the private eye. From Veronica Mars.
It's so hard to take him seriously.
I know. Yeah, absolutely.
I've never watched Veronica Mars, but I did just watch the show The Other Two on Comedy Central, and he plays the goofiest,
yep,
like, most ridiculous agent to this, like, YouTube star kid, and his name is Scooter, first of all, and he, yep, is, like, just a lunatic, and so watching him here, I was like, what? Really? Why him? Like, there's people, like, yeah, I get typecasting, and, like, people can play outside their roles, but watching him, I'm like, maybe not him in this role.
That might have been part of the point, because he does play, like, the exact same character all the time throughout different things, because he's kind of like a bumbling, sarcastic, womanizing person in Veronica Mars. But I think that kind of makes it interesting here, because we see him being sleazy with Whitney, and she's just kind of like putting up with him. She knows how he is, but she knows that she can get a lot out of him. But I think it also makes his turn when he just beats on that guy relentlessly really interesting, because I know I wasn't expecting that the first time I saw that. Did it feel, I kind of know what they were kind of playing with, like you were supposed to be maybe at ease or making fun of him, and then you see him like turn on a dime like that. Was it effective, or is he just so goofy that it was hard to believe that he could be an effective mob boss?
I think the latter for me. I was very much on the,
okay,
the Vinny train. I could not take him seriously, and I was like, whoa, but I didn't really have that much of an effect because of that.
Yeah, I agree. I was like, this is a little gratuitous. Like,
yeah,
it after he like had him pinned down and was like punching him, I was like, why are we still here doing this? Because especially like, actually, when he has the guy on the ground and is hitting him, it doesn't look like him. And I was kind of like taken out of the scene when he sat back down in the booth,
mm-hmm,
and was like fully collected and acting like, you know, the guy that I kind of like, or the characters that I've seen him play in other places. So it was definitely like too jarring for to have that actor in that role.
Fair point. So it just didn't pay off. What they were trying to do was obvious, but it just didn't kind of pay off. Makes sense. But so Whitney and her husband go to the mob boss. I'm just going to keep calling him Vinny Van Lo, because I'm terrible at remembering characters' names in this. They go to him, they ask him for help, they ask him for guys, because they want to go steal these atom bombs from Roxxon. Because that sounds like a great idea. And so now it's kind of a race to see who can get them first. It's Whitney and her crew, and Whitney like yelling at people trying to find these atom bombs. And I'm not sure how they're going to get them out, but whatever. And then Peggy puts together her own team, which is so entertaining to me. I mean, we see the scientist and we see Rose throughout the first season. We see glimpses of them. We see glimpses of them in the second season. But did it come as a surprise when they basically formed their own team to the point where like they even had a slow-mo walk at the beginning of the mission?
I love
was anyone
it.
Surprised to see these smaller characters come into play here, or excited?
I was excited and a little surprised, but mainly like, I think that the way they constructed this episode, it was just so perfect, because they had, you know, Sousa getting, what is his name? Samberly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They had him like being like, I know a way to like, not maybe not recruit him in that moment, but he was the gateway to getting him on board.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, to have Peggy step in and be like, do not underestimate Rose. Like, we both worked with her in New York. She is trained. She's gone through the same training that we have. And then to, you know, have this sort of like, I love a recruitment like montage.
Yeah.
So, you know, where they're just like watching her like beat the crap out of that guy. And then like, you know, she's clearly tougher than the other scientist recruit. And like, you know, it's just like watching them come together. The slow-mo thing killed me. I love it so much. So yeah, I liked how it all came. I liked the pacing of how it all came together too. I think that that was a huge benefit to the episode to make it feel right and like it fit.
I had no idea who Peggy was going to mean when she was like, or do we know someone that we can trust? I was like, do you? And then they showed her.
We've really only met four people.
Yeah. And then they showed Rose and I was very, very excited. I did not care for the scientist. Well, I liked his little story when he was like, I wanted to work in the field. And then he was like, oh, your pie was in me. And I was like, okay, that's a bit much.
Yep.
So he was hit or miss, but I loved the slow motion walk.
I loved it when Sousa was very against Rose, or not very against Rose, but Peggy called him out on it. But like, it's so fascinating to watch him fight against the fact that like of Rose joining the team, and she had to actually like prove, he had to actually see her in action in order to be like, okay. And even then he was a little so-so about it. But it didn't take a lot of convincing to get the whining, as Ariana put it in the doc, the whining scientist man on the team. It's like, your sexism is showing, bud.
I loved Peggy's line there where she's like, I'm seeing Daniel Sousa, but I'm hearing Jack Thompson.
Yeah, so yes. Like,
it's true.
Nailed it. I loved that one. That was a good line. And so they go on this mission, and of course, Samerly and Rose are up first, and they disarm the guards, who are very obviously like the mafia guys because of their expensive watches and shoes and all that kind of stuff. And Rose just kind of like outdoes all of them. She is fantastic in the field. And I mean, I'm going to talk about it, I guess, a little bit later when we do favorite scenes, but basically, Rose on this mission is my favorite scene. Her knocking out people, her knowing exactly what to do and when. It was really nice to see her in action after only seeing her like basically work desk jobs.
And like the whole mission kind of like was in her hands, especially at the beginning here, because scientist dude is not all that useful. Yep. He is basically tries to blow it in the first 10 seconds.
Yep.
And she manages to kind of cover it up and keep going and then give them the in to kind of turn to walk away so they can throw the thing. Like, she is the one who gets them in there. It has nothing to do with anybody else. Literally, the other three are hiding in the car. So if it wasn't for Rose, this whole mission is scrubbed.
Yeah, and we've seen Rose in action before, like when Jarvis comes into the SSO, right? Was it Jarvis who came in season one?
Yeah, he came into the SSR Howard's SSR. Statements.
Right. And she, like, so she's had, like, prep work working out front, diverting people. Like, she knows how to play that game very well. And yes, she was just sitting there the whole time, like as a phone operator, but she's screening people and reading people and knowing what to say and when to say it and how to play them against themselves. So like, we've seen her do that just in very subtle ways. So it's like very, I thought that that was like a great way to showcase that skill set in the field.
Now I want to know how she just like knocked it out of the park in every way. Like, she has the same training, but like Sousa said, like she has no field experience. So I kind of want to know what like Rose's life is outside of work, that she was just like so ready to step up for the mission.
She like goes home and trains, every night.
Like, yeah.
She's running scenarios and like, yeah, like I can see a whole thing. Yeah.
And what she like, does she go home and be like, maybe one day I'll ask? Like, you know, like, does she have that, like, you know, when we watch that, the short before this, like, is she, you know, ready with the suitcase, like, ready, or the briefcase, like, on the desk, like, just in case they call her? Like, you know, is she, like, secretly wanting that life?
Yeah.
Or is she content, like, you know, with her job? You know, we don't know that much about her backstory, which now I want 3 seasons and a comic spinoff. So.
Oh, that would be great, because that means potentially more Peggy as well. So I'm on board for that.
You know, this is a Jack Thompson podcast, so. Peggy can appear one every now and then.
Oh, okay. Okay, I mean, that's fine. I mean, that's more than she gets right now, and she would probably get more action on this podcast than she did in Endgame, but that's another
discussion. We're not there yet.
I mean, I would be game for a Carter and Rose show, too, because, like, watching them be badasses would be, I would be all game for that.
Yes. I mean, they basically hold down the fort for this.
They do, yeah.
Like very 100%. Much so. Samberly comes in handy, which is kind of nice to see him doing something well, considering that, again, this is the Strategic Scientific Reserve, and we've only ever seen the scientists, like, bumbling about. So it was nice to kind of at least see him take charge a little bit at the beginning of the mission once they were in the building. Knowing exactly where to go, how to look for the power sources, the locks and all that kind of stuff. So that was nice.
And his gadgets worked. Which is always helpful.
I completely forgot about the scene earlier. Was it with getting the key?
Yeah.
Yes, let's talk about his gadgets. So to rewind, Peggy goes undercover to get the key to Roxxon. She gets to bust out her American accent again, which is always lovely. And yeah, one of his inventions actually works, and it's a mind wipe of like 2 minutes, which I thought was an entertaining sequence, except for the fact that like the guy was really gross, like super gross.
It honestly makes it, I think it makes it more enjoyable because you don't feel bad for this idiot.
I mean, sure.
At all. I mean, if you felt even the slightest bit bad for him, then it wouldn't be as, like, fulfilling. But, like, every time she has to, like, zap him, it's like, mwahaha. So, yeah, no. I love that scene, like, that whole sequence. It's pretty fantastic.
I agree. It was super fun. And, like, it was kind of, like, half, like, oh, she might be giving this person brain damage. But then half, oh, he's truly terrible. So, I don't care.
So it's fine.
Maybe the brain damage will help.
Yeah.
And also, like, just the switch within that scene of, like, how careful she is with how much she's using it and, like, then trying to, like, go back and, like, be, you know, completely, like, restart the scene and then restart the scene and then restart the scene. And then she's like, whatever. And, like, when she's, like, trying to, like, search him at the end and she's just, like, doing it over and over and over again every time he opens his eyes, I thought that was really funny, and just her like rolling her eyes every time he like gets up. It was,
and, like, she was very much not wanting to go near the guy, let alone touch him.
Exactly. Yeah. And then when she figured out that it was like in his belt buckle, I thought that that was actually really a clever placement for it, because it's always on him,
except for when he is with his secretaries, maybe.
Yep.
But Peggy undercover, I was going to say Peggy under Carter. Peggy undercover is always really entertaining, too, to see all these personas that she takes on. And when she takes on, like, the American persona, it's always very fascinating to me, because she's always, like, either super ditzy or impatient. I don't know.
Well, I think that this particular persona really played off of the woman that she ran into leaving the office.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like she was just like, oh, this is the, like, she did a quick read without, like, knowing for sure, but, like, a quick read being like, I kind of know the type of girl that is working in this office.
Yeah, this is who gets hired here.
Yes, and who, you know, they won't remember much. They're just there to, like, barely do their job, I'm assuming. And then, you know, the type of guy that she's after, like, she understands him. So, you know, she just leans into it, which, first of all, the wig, horrible. But the rest of it,
yes, it is.
Was just so perfect. And just how annoyed she is with how she has to act in order to, like, you know, make progress. Even when a few episodes ago when they were in that exclusive club, and she's just like, oh, you know, books confuse me. Like, you know, it's just, she knows what these people like will buy into and be like, oh yeah, this person's harmless. So she like really leans into like the worst of things, which I think is smart on her part, but it also annoys her to no end, which I also appreciate.
And I mean, luckily she has a working gadget. We've only ever seen Howard's gadgets, which work like 50% of the time.
And they're never what they were initially built to do.
Exactly. And I had actually forgotten that this gadget from the SSR actually works because of how bumbling those scientists are. Was anyone surprised when it actually did what it was supposed to, even after we saw the scientists who had done a few trials on it, like run into a wall?
I mean, with as much as she was using it, I was surprised it like lasted. Because in this type of situation, it usually works like the first three times and then it stops working and then she has to like find another way. Yeah. But I was happy to see that it, you know, continued to work and that she was able to get what she needed and get out of there. So, but yeah, it was a bit of a surprise.
But hey, it's the, Strategic Scientific Reserve. So I guess they have to have some sciencey things work sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But apparently they can't open all locks. So there's that. To get back to the big heist, Samberly locks Jarvis in a room with a bomb. Not great. and apparently disabling a bomb is nothing like making a souffle. So Jarvis was a little in over his head.
I feel like everything like sort of just like came to a head in that moment. And like Sousa like... was like, what do I need to do? So he like trying to calm down Jarvis, trying to make sure that Samberly doesn't like blow anything up on the other side of him, and is worrying about Peg off somewhere who's just like, you know what, I'll take care of everything else. So it was just like a very like everything that could go wrong went wrong. Because and then we see like even Sousa was like not, he's the best of the best supposedly, and like he couldn't do the atomic thing in practice. So like when you see Jarvis in there, you're like, oh, great.
Yep. Basically. But I mean, Jarvis is the very nervous type. But like he's very smart. He's very intelligent. But yeah, seeing that Sousa couldn't do it previously was kind of like, oh no.
And I feel like the last few episodes, Jarvis has been getting kind of more excited for the missions. And I'm nervous that after like fully getting thrown into the fire and then what happens to Peggy later is going to make him pull back a little, because I love when he's fully in it.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. I was actually watching this episode with my roommate and my roommate was like, why is Jarvis doing this? Because she's seen like some of the other episodes and not all of them. But she's right. Like, he's not part of the SSR. He's kind of just Peggy's helper. So I definitely think it's a question of like, how much of this can he endure? And Kendra, you think it's gonna reach that point where like
I'm nervous. Well, even just based on what he said to Peggy at the end, like there was some real close calls in this episode that he might not be. I think he's gonna be down to protect her, but I just feel like he's gonna be less excited about it
or taking a step back when it comes to like bombs and stuff.
Reasonably so, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. It is kind of nice to see him in these situations too, because it kind of humanizes everyone to a point. Like, they're not all, you see the SSR agents and like they're trained for these sorts of things. And then to have Jarvis come in and be able to do things mildly well, or like to be able to disarm a bomb without ever doing it before, it kind of humanizes or brings the SSR agents down a little bit, for better or for worse, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it plays off of like that scene from last week's episode where, you know, Sousa comes up and it's just like, oh, you're with Jarvis again. Like, you know, and she's like, yes, he's part of the team. Like, there is a team and he is part of it. And like, that's just, you're going to have to like get over that. And, you know, yes, he's not trained, but he's been around the block a few times. He's like dealt with very delicate situations with Howard, whether that's with women or just in, you know, he knows where all of these locations are that a possible atomic bomb could be. Like, he's a vault of information.
Yep.
And he may not have been, you know, infiltrating these places, but, you know, he's aware of what's going on. He's very good at his job. And yes, his job is basically on, if you had to write a one sentence description, it's taking care of what needs to be done. And that's like a great person to have on your team. Like the person who can just, if something needs to be done, he will take care of it. Like, and you don't have to worry about it. And so to have him not have, yes, the skill set and the training that these people have, but to be able to provide in the situation. And, you know, like then at the end, he says like butler's orders, like, you know, like he is in that authoritative position in this moment. And it, yes, it's putting someone to bed and making sure they drink their tea. But like, that's where his like authority can rest. But he will serve at the needs of the people that he wants to protect and feels like he can protect. So I think it's like a good, I like having him around because personally, I think he's fantastic. Yep. But I don't think the lack of training really puts him at a disadvantage here because he just has different training. But I feel like maybe if like Anna gets in trouble, that's her name, Anna.
Yeah.
If she gets in trouble or like, you know, if that is at risk, if the life that he has is at risk and like the safety of that, I feel like he's very much a Stark man in that sense. Like if that gets put at risk, then maybe it's time to pump the brakes a bit.
Couldn't have put it better. And like you see him pumping the brakes, like Kendra mentioned, when Peggy gets impaled.
Yeah, I have a lot of problems with that.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Let's talk about the Peggy and Whitney fight. They kind of show down, but it's not really a big showdown. They kind of take a few swings at each other. Whitney puts her hand on Peggy's arm and starts almost infusing her with zero matter, which not great, and apparently hurts worse than being impaled by rebar. So yeah. there's that for sure. But yeah, I knew, so this is the one thing that I always remember about this season is Peggy getting impaled. So I knew it was coming and it was really hard for me to watch. Like it physically hurts me to watch this happen. Did it come as a surprise? You said that you had a lot of thoughts on it, Brittany.
Yeah, it came as a surprise mainly in the fact that she was like, no hospital, no hospital. And I was like, this is something that you really need a trained physician for. And like Violet was great and took care of a lot, but this is something that needs, there's a lot of wound closure, especially if it went straight through. I don't care if it missed any vital organs. There's gonna be some internal bleeding. Like I was just, I was not okay with the, I know we don't question the science, but I'm going to question the anatomy here. Like, is that it? I've watched a lot of hospital dramas in my lifetime. Many, like, yeah. I feel qualified enough from even a television viewer standpoint to say, you're not going to recover on tea. And you also probably should not be having tea right now. You should be having, like, fluids because you lost a lot of blood. You need to be drinking water to like help your body replenish it.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Well, and yeah, I've watched a lot of hospital medical dramas too. And of course, the first thing my head goes to is, so they pulled her off the rebar.
Yeah.
How like, did they get her off?
Like that was, those were not short. Like it wasn't like it barely protruded through the skin. Like it was a long piece of rebar sticking out of her. And they definitely didn't have like bolt cutters nearby to like cut it short so they could, no.
They, well, like, you shouldn't have removed it anyway because aren't you supposed to not remove something like that?
Right.
Well, yeah, it usually holds, like, blood vessels closed so that you don't bleed out and bleed to death before they can, you know, get in for surgery and help you and all that. So, yeah, there was a lot of medical issues with this moment, but because I was trying not to question the science, I'm like, okay, just accept it. It's okay.
Yeah. To play devil's advocate, the reason why she didn't want to go to the hospital, because I'm sure she would have loved like the drugs and the actual care of a hospital, but the reason why she didn't want to go is because there's a league of extraordinarily white gentlemen like trying to basically get at her. And
oh, yeah. No, I'm completely fine with the not going to the hospital. So like, sure. All right. So person of interest, that's my other medical knowledge. They would have someone come and like, there's a separate like location that you have someone on, like someone in the, even the SSR, like you have a physician,
yeah,
you know, or surgeon
that would on be smart.
Staff that, you know, you have available for these missions. Because like, yes, I completely agree with the fact that she would not want to go to the hospital. That's not what I have a problem with. It's the fact that a nurse treated her. And gotcha. Not to say that she's not trained and that those linens were possibly sanitary in her house that for the spare bed, but you know, like there's a limit of what she could do versus like having a professional like doctor or surgeon stitch her up and make sure that there's no extra bleeding. And I was just very uneasy. Like, so like a person of interest, they get injured quite a lot and they cannot, their faces cannot be known. So like they have to get like stitched up somewhere else, or like even in elementary, like Joan was a surgeon, Joan Watson, and she like stitches up a guy who's like in trouble and can't be taken to the hospital while she's held hostage, by the way. Superhuman Joan Watson. Yeah. So that, I just had a huge problem with the science of that. And I did sincerely try to look away, but there's that, just that episode of Grey's Anatomy where like seven people are impaled on that one pole. And I'm like, I know the protocol to getting people off a pole if they're impaled, because that was the entire arc of the episode.
Christina Ricci.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. And then the old people saying goodbye. I can't handle it. I believe
it's called Into You Like a Train.
Yes. Into You Like a Train. Exactly what it's called. Because
I've only watched that one like a million times because it's such a good episode.
It's such a good episode because it's like the patients are just, they're like the crux of the episode. And you just, but anyway. Point being, we know how to get people off of things that they're impaled to.
And what's the best option. Not do it right.
And this was not it.
Yeah. Do you think there'd be any difference with the fact that Violet maybe probably worked like helping out in the war efforts and would have patched up a lot of war victims that were very badly hurt?
Yeah, I think that that's a great point. I still don't think that they had enough supplies. Like, you know, like they would need, yes, she poured like the, I guess, antiseptic on her, but like
betadine,
but like I don't know, I just feel like I'm not comfortable with it. But I that's a great point, Kendra. I do think that, you know, triage in the battlefield is like you do what you can, and since she's not dealing with 100 patients dying and screaming, it's only one who's barely screaming. I think that that's a great point, that she would know what to do. But then again, I'm still just about it.
It's definitely hard to watch. And apparently it's really hard for Sousa to watch, like we mentioned earlier. He has very longing and loving looks at Peggy in this moment, and even ignores instructions from Violet to like go get linens. Literally the easiest thing that he could do, or like the only thing he could do to help Peggy in that moment, and he just didn't do it right away, which is frustrating, but also I was into it, and it's hard for me not to be into it because I think they're cute.
It's just hard because you know he's not thinking about,
yes,
you know, Violet's here and Peggy's here, and you know, in this moment Peggy's injured, Peggy's in, you know, mortal danger,
and he's reacting.
So he's 100% focused on making sure Peggy's okay, and so he's not thinking about the whole picture, and Violet is getting the whole picture. Like, she's finally seeing the really big picture that, you know, she's kind of been missing up until now. And so, yeah, it's kind of hard to watch because you're like, yeah, this isn't going to end well for him. Like, sorry, Sousa, but yeah. But at the same time, like, I really like him and Peggy. And so seeing him like that devoted and like paying that much attention and completely turning it off and being so focused on her, for me, it works really well because I'm really happy about it. But if you're not,
and that's the first time we see him do that to this extent, isn't it? Like, it's more than just pining,
in this moment,
which is what we've seen previously. But yeah, Violet knows because she's smart and she gets it, and she is not happy at all.
Well, I think because it's sort of like we talked about a few episodes ago, it's like this betray of, like, you know, she's been so good about him working late and being committed. And like, she says to him in that one episode, she's like, I'm so happy. Like, you know, you're working to save the world. And like, she places a lot of like leniency, or gives him a lot of leniency when it comes to work, because she knows how important it is. But now it's sort of shifts. Like, did he betray that, like, you know, looseness that she allows in their relationship by, is he just spending time with Peggy? Is he actually working? Like, all of those thoughts would go through my head for sure. Like, how much of it is work and how much of it is I'm spending more time with Peggy?
Right. How much of it is like, he has to be there.
He has to be there. Exactly.
He wants to. Yeah.
Like when he drops, like last week, he just like dropped off those files at her, like just showed up at the residence and was just like, oh, I thought you would read these. And she's like, yeah, I will. I'll get to it. And she has like Jarvis passed out in the passenger seat and like a guy in the trunk. And like, you know, he just doesn't get it. Like, you don't need to be here right now. I could read those in the morning. Like, yeah, I get that my time's approved. Like, okay, great. Why'd you have to come here to tell me that? And that's an instance where it's like, he doesn't have to be there, but he wants to.
Yeah.
And it just makes you appreciate Jarvis and Anna that much more too. Like, watching all of this, you're like, they really are just wonderful. And their commitment to each other is really wonderful. And like, seeing how they are both so secure in their relationship, when you see all of this chaos going on with Sousa, it just always reminds me that like, they are like relationship goals.
They really are. And it also is kind of reminiscent of like, this could have very much been Peggy and Jarvis's relationship. Or like, they could have very much gone this way with the two of them. And it's really nice that they didn't.
Agreed.
Because they work so closely. Like, it's not the best that they do it with Sousa and Peggy, but I think it would have been worse if it was Jarvis.
I 100% agree.
So yeah, so when the episode ends, Peggy's kind of recuperating in bed, listening to a romantic song with Wilkes standing next to her bed, and he disappears. And sort of at the same time, Whitney Frost is basically threatening her husband again, because when is she not threatening her husband? Let's be real. And he's trying to call a secret meeting with the council or whatever. And that's kind of where we end it. Was there anything else that happened in this episode, like Peggy going undercover, that I completely forgot about and that we didn't discuss here?
I think that just Whitney Frost's husband is a loser, but that stands from episode to episode.
Have we discussed, again, I'm sorry, I didn't listen to last week's episode, but have we discussed what their relationship is like and if we're supposed to feel that like it was more of a marriage of convenience for her, or if she actually feels for him? Have we had this conversation?
I don't think we talked about it too much, but I do think one thing that happens in this episode is he makes that call to betray her,
mm-hmm.
which is like, you know, kind of a huge thing for him. And he's like, when they were like, they won't be happy to like convene. And he's just like, no, it'll be better once they hear what I have to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
I do think though, to your point though, that it is more of a marriage of convenience. Cause I think everything in Whitney's life has been of convenience, because she can't get her foot in the door any other way. And so I feel like it just even based on their interactions, I was actually kind of shocked that they were sleeping in the same bed, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
When we like saw their scene in this episode where she like creeps on him in the closet. But yeah, I do think it's there's no love lost, because one of them's becoming a superhuman and the other one's under the control of the council or the group of nine or whatever they are.
If it's not a marriage of convenience, do we really fault her husband for not standing by his partner when she's on an evil plot to take over the world?
Crickets, because yeah. We're all just like, yeah, we probably shouldn't judge him for that.
Yeah. I mean, for sure, 100%. Like, she's nuts.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I can't remember where I read it, but when we were jumping into this season, I was kind of rereading old interviews and old articles and stuff. And I can't remember if it was on Hypeable or somewhere else, but I think there was an interview done with the actor who was playing her husband. And he was supposedly, like, before the season even started, before we kind of knew who the big bad or like the big players were going to be, he was talking about how his relationship, his character's relationship with his wife on his end was very much like he was in love, very much in love with his wife. He was like a devoted husband and all of these sorts of things. And it seems really weird to have him kind of playing it that way. Or thinking that he was playing it that way, but also like we get the lines about how he was cheating on his wife at some point, or like we get these scenes where it's really hard to tell exactly how he feels about Whitney, like if he does love her or if he kind of treats her the same way as other men do and kind of like dismiss her. But I just thought it was really interesting that he was like, oh yeah, I play him as like a really loving husband and like he would do anything for her. I need to go back and find that interview and just double check, but that's in my head going through it now.
That's so odd because, you know, thinking about it now, mm-hmm. she definitely needed his connections to get to like the more scientific areas and things like being able to use him as her like crossover into that world so that she can actually use her brain, but also using her face and being able to be Whitney Frost, the, you know, movie star who he can then kind of use in his bid for election and all this stuff. Like it really would work as a marriage of convenience. Like it really wouldn't, it would not feel out of place at all that they were both using each other
mm-hmm.
to get further in the world. And it almost seems like they both kind of understand that, but hearing that the actor is playing it like he's head over heels in love just kind of, it makes him feel so much dopier than he comes off as, because he doesn't seem like he would, she is clearly not like in love with him. She is definitely not necessarily using him. She probably does have some sort of affection for him because she doesn't like kill him right away or what anything like that. But it also doesn't seem like she's head over heels. Like I'm so glad this worked out and that now I get all the things I want and I'm just lucky. Like she's been playing this, you know, the whole time. She knew what she wanted and she figured out how to get it. So it's a very strange kind of situation.
I will definitely look up that interview and see if I can share it. I don't remember where it was, but yeah, it's weird. Very strange. All right. If we don't have anything else to discuss for this episode, let's move into our favorite scenes and favorite lines. Mine, as I had mentioned previously, was basically everything involving Rose on the mission because I love seeing her in action. And I also love the fact that when she was going up to kind of distract Whitney Frost's people, she like went up to a guy, snuck up on him and was like, hey, sugar. And like his immediate reaction was to slug her. Like he wasn't fazed by her at all, which I found fascinating, but she was ready for it. And she took him down and later returned to the team, holding his knife with brass knuckles attached to it.
I love the way she stands behind the scientist dude holding that knife. Like she's not like, it doesn't look menacing, but it's also just kind of like, oh yeah, yeah, that's me. That's right. Like I did that.
Yep. Yeah.
It's just lovely.
Love it. What was your favorite scene, Kristen?
Mine kind of takes off of yours a little bit. I love that Peggy and Rose are the two who are like getting things done while Sousa and Jarvis are trying to dismantle the bomb, and you've got the other scientist guy playing with wires, but you've got these two ladies who are out there like taking down bad guys and, you know, making sure that the other team has the time they need to get the mission done. And it's just so much fun because honestly, like, it took me a second. I kind of stepped back and was like, if this was any other, like, spy secret agent show, like, the tables would have been reversed. You know, Peggy would have been the one dismantling the bomb because it's the less physical job. But because this is Peggy effing Carter, she's going to be the one taking out bad guys. That's just how this works. So it was just a moment where I kind of appreciated the show and, like, appreciate Peggy. And, yeah, that's why it's my favorite.
So good. I love that so much. Brittany, we already kind of touched on your favorite scene, but I would love to hear you gush about it a little bit more.
So my favorite scene is the slow-mo walk where everyone comes out and, you know, of course, Samberly, like, trips and, you know, Rose has to, like, steady him. I love a good slow-mo walk. I'm kind of upset there wasn't, like, a bigger fan action, you know, to, like, get the hair moving, but I'll take what I can get. And I just love when they all stop and they're like kind of looking around and they're like, Jarvis, where's the car? And he's like, oh, forgot I had to park around the corner. I'll be right back. And then he like runs off. I loved it so well, so much. It was just it was played very well between all of them. And I thought it was great that, like, you know, we see Samberly as like the bumbling guy who's just like, you know, getting out of the office for the first time and like can't even walk in slow-mo. So
it's so good. It kind of reminded me, and I off the top of my head, I can't remember if this was before or after Guardians, but of the slow-mo, like getting ready for battle scene in the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie set to Cherry Bomb. When they're like walking and Gamora's yawning and Rocket's adjusting himself. Like, Marvel does those kinds of things very well because they know how to play with that trope or that kind of scene. But it's just made all the better by Jarvis, 100%.
Definitely.
And Kendra, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite was the memory lapse gadget scene that we were talking about earlier, because even though you kind of see it coming after the first time he walked back in was like agent and then she had to use the memory thing on him, it just kept getting more fun and he kept getting more terrible and she kept getting more uncomfortable yet determined, and I really liked it.
That's so good. And that actually dovetails nicely into my favorite line. Was in between her having to zap his brain so many things with the contraption. Peggy just has to keep reminding herself, you are saving the world. You are saving the world. You are saving the world. And it just made me laugh because she needs a little bit of a pep talk to herself. And that was so great. Kristen, your favorite line.
Mine's from the beginning of the episode, when Peggy and Jarvis are going to steal the dead girl's body. And, you know, they're breaking in to the vent outside and he's boosting her up and she sticks her hand out from the vent to like grab his hand to help him in. And he's like, what? Like, he expected to wait. And she's like, aren't you coming? And he's like, he just kind of stands there and she goes, isn't that why you wore your recreation tie? And it kills me that she knows which ties are which. Like, she knows. She knows. He was planning to get in on the action and he was playing along like he's not supposed to. And I just thought that was really sweet.
It was so cute. I love that he has different outfits because of course he does.
His recreation tie, his all business tie, his I have to deal with Howard today ties. Like, I'm sure he has all kinds.
His I have to deal with Bernard tie.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And then date night ties.
Yes, exactly. Brittany, your favorite line is...
My favorite line, of course, is Jarvis.
Yes.
which is at the end, after he like kind of tucks Peg in, you know, he takes a breath for the first time in a while. And he says, you know, these adventures, they're only enjoyable if you return from them, Miss Carter. And it's just so cute. And he like has like this little, like, you know, tear in his eye because he's just like relieved, I think, to see her in bed and safe and everyone is in that room and safe and he can just go get some sleep.
Yep. He took good care of her. He got her home. he brought the car around for her.
Got the car.
And actually remembered where he parked it. You know, it's the little things. But no, I did love that line as well. And Kendra, your favorite line, please.
I liked Whitney's line. She said people thought Galileo was insane. I've liked how season two was kind of leaning more into the science of it all. And she, like, just the smile on her face when she said that, like, she clearly thinks and is obviously on the brink of a huge scientific discovery. And, like, the fact that he's calling her insane is, like, the best thing that he could possibly do because that means that she's a true genius. I liked it.
Love it. Yeah, I like that too. I like that she's fierce because of the science background. It makes her very much even more intimidating.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those were our thoughts about the episode, as well as our favorite scenes and favorite lines. And as always, we want to hear your thoughts. We'd also love to hear what you agree on that we talked about, and maybe if you have some different thoughts on things. So please get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we also want to hear all of the good things that you have to say about us. And if you would put them in iTunes reviews, that would be great, because then other people can read all the good things that you say about us and then start listening. And then we can all become a big, happy family, and maybe do like slow-mos together. I don't know. But as always, we have incentives for people who do leave us 5-star reviews. And if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will seduce a scientist for you so you can borrow his equipment. That feels like a very loaded statement, but I don't doubt
it. Yeah.
100% she would be down with that. So please leave us a review on iTunes if you would like Karen to do that for you. Another way to get into contact with us, and probably a more direct way, is to come join our Facebook group. We're having some cool discussions in there. Lots of memes, lots of graphics or fun things that we find around the internet, but also questions about the actual show itself. So please come find us, come join us, and come hang out with us. You can find us on Facebook at Rewatchables Rewinders. That's the name of our group. Just search that and you should be able to find us pretty quickly. We have an image of Peg. It's hard not to miss. Or it's hard to miss. Yes. Yes, it's hard to miss. So please come join us. And in speaking of listener feedback, we have a couple things to touch on for this week. Kendra, would you get this first tweet, please?
Sure. From at K Sheltiel on Twitter. Says, okay, Rewatchable, you finally convinced me. I'm going to go back and listen to your Veronica Mars episodes. I'll be a newbie for it, and I basically know nothing about this show. Great choice.
Enjoy.
Listen to all our episodes. There's only 309 of them before this one.
Yes, but also I'm very excited. I think we were going back and forth a little bit, he and I, about Veronica Mars, and I always love people going back and watching that. So I hope you do enjoy it. Brittany, I see that you would like to get this next tweet.
Yes. Okay. So this is the queer place at Nurse Brack, who is totally on our side here on the Jack Thompson podcast, has sent us a video that Chad Michael Murray was a part of with Teen Vogue with the comment relevant question mark. And I'd like to just cite a line from the description of said video on Teen Vogue, where Chad Michael Murray, a beautiful older man now, unfortunately, you know, he has children and, you know, has lived a life, responds to some Riverdale memes, because he's joining Riverdale as a cult leader. And, you know, the fans used, this is what the description says, fans use memes to uncover important revelations and let Chad Michael Murray know just how attractive they think he is as a cult leader, which I believe Nurse Brack is sending us this with the comment relevant, because we all are in agreement, except for Natalie, that Jack Thompson could easily be swayed by Hydra at this point in his life. And that's his path. That's his path that he's going to choose. He's going to be easily persuaded to join Hydra, infiltrate the SSR with Hydra. It's just, it's all downhill for him. But we're rooting for him. We'd really like to see him pull through, but we don't think it'll happen. He did bury that flag. Not great.
Yep, not great. He did bury that flag. But I guess I'm going to have to just wait to listen to see how you guys feel about this as we move along on the Jack Thompson podcast. I can't wait to listen and subscribe to that one too. All right. So, like I said, that's everything for this episode, but I want to know what our newbies think is going to happen in the future, especially in the next episode. So it is now time for Brittany's brainstorms and Kendra's creeping suspicions for season 2, episode 6, Life of the Party. What do you got?
There's going to be a party.
No.
I mean, I hope so. I didn't get Wheel of Fortune with Sense8, so who knows? Life of the Party could knock at a party.
In the oh my gosh, I forgot about that one. Yes.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a party. Hopefully Peg gets to go to the party, not in a disguise, this time with a blonde wig. Although Sousa spent a lot of time looking at that photo of her in a blonde wig, so maybe it's one of his dreams to see her back in that type of outfit. I mean, we're close to things being resolved, but at the same time, Peggy can't get out of bed. So either we're going to have a time jump to where it's a reasonable amount of time that Peggy is healed and Whitney has made a lot of progress, that means, because things are moving very rapidly with the Zero Matter. So I don't think that that's going to happen, but I don't know how involved she could be from the outside. So I don't know. But there's going to be a party either way. Either Peg has to sit at home and not go to the party, but the party's going on with or without her. And Jack Thompson joins Hydra. That's going to be my prediction from here on out at the end of every episode, Jack Thompson.
Every episode, yep.
You know, if he decided to change his name when he joined Hydra and become like a secret Hydra agent and he became, his agent name was Edgar Evernever, it would explain a lot of things. I'm just saying, it would explain a whole lot of stuff. And it would connect Riverdale to this whole mess.
Oh, jeez.
I'm just teasing. It's good fun.
Kendra, do you have any creeping suspicions?
Well, my prediction last week didn't even come close to coming true. So I'm going to predict it again and bring the podcast back to what really matters and say that we're going to go back to New York and that Jack Thompson is going to have some sort of hero moment and he's going to choose the SSR over the people that are trying to sway him away from it. Which,
oh, yeah, the Dad from that 70s show.
Yeah.
He's still causing trouble. The War Council, I think, works for.
But no, I like that prediction a lot. Obviously, I will not say anything about it, but that is a solid prediction for sure. And I guess, hopefully, we'll have to see if that pans out in the next episode. Again, that was called Life of the Party. And yeah, that's all we got for you this week. So until next time, I'm Danielle.
I'm Kristen.
I'm Brittany.
No, I'm Kendra.
And we'll talk to you later. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Karen cry?
I don't think so. I think after bawling her eyes out at Endgame, I think it's going to be a little while before another movie makes her cry.
She won't feel again for a while.